I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, it's been about a year since the WHYY family said goodbye to Nessa Foreman. She died of cancer at the age of 68. She had a long career in the arts and leisure, editor of the Philadelphia Bulletin. I first met her years ago when she was a communications executive here at the radio station. Nessa was really an interesting combination of being very sweet and very powerful at the same time. I could hug her and be hugged, but God knows I wouldn't want to get into a fight with her. A little scary there. And I told her that. I said, I wouldn't want to get in a fight with you. I've had enough losses in my life. So anyway, once we had a pretty intimate and poignant conversation about one of her family members who was very ill, and because of it, as she was growing more dependent, she was losing her self-respect. And Nessa wanted to know how she could help. And I said, Nessa, if you want to bring dignity to somebody's life, ask them for something. Well, I'm deeply touched to see that quote of mine in a new book co-written by the late Nessa Foreman and today's guest, Mary Monica Mitchell. The book is called Woofs to the Wise, Learning to Lick Life and Chew on Civility. It's about an unlikely correspondence between Mitchell's French bulldog and Foreman herself. Lessons are shared about manners and social norms, but then they turn to matters of friendship, health, and self-preservation, as Foreman reveals that she, in fact, is ill. Mary Mitchell writes a column on modern etiquette at Reuters. Her column, Ms. Demeanor, ran here in the Inquirer for many years. She joins us to talk about communication between friends, difficult conversation, and what it means to be there for someone whose health is in decline. Mary, welcome to Voices.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm really been looking forward to this for a long time. Later in the show, we'll hear from Terry Maxwell. She's an expert on palliative and hospice care. And of course, we would love to hear from you. It's about being there for a friend, being a friend, and how to be a friend. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. And you can send us a tweet at hashtag voices. That's hashtag voices. We would love to hear from you during this show. So, Mary, the book is all about relationships, and it centers on your relationship with Nessa. Tell us about this relationship who you both call your sister by choice.
Gosh, Nessa and I go back to her days at the Philadelphia Bulletin when I was in public relations and I had to deal with Nessa professionally. Ouch! She was tough. And I remember I made a personal decision that this person could not possibly be so crusty and so detached that underneath there just had to be someone who felt a lot and thought a lot and had a lot of I just knew there was much more under the surface. Well, when the Philadelphia Bulletin closed, she realized that I really just liked her. I didn't want anything from her. And so the friendship took off from there, and she really did become part of our family, celebrated all of the holidays with us, and just added so much to our life.
I've got to be honest here. When Jennifer, our producer, first proposed this book, I didn't want to do it, you know, and I was very polite, and I pretended I forgot or didn't remember. And she proposed it again. And I've got to tell you, as much as I loved and still love Nessa, the thought of having a show about two women talking through a dog, frankly, was silly. But Jennifer persisted again, and then I realized that when she says yes and I say no, that she's usually right and I'm usually wrong. So I became open to the dog. Now listen, you and Nessa are both communications professionals. Why the hell did you have to talk through a dog?
I thank you. Yes, we talked through a dog because, ironically, when there are really tough things that you want to say to each other, then sometimes it's easier to talk through a third party. In this case, it happened to be a dog. And the way that happened was simply that we all know Nessa. We all know how tough she was and what a micromanager she was. Well, when she finally got a ticket to visit me in Seattle, which took her 3 years, might I tell you, she started sending me emails that said things like, well, should we go to the art museum before or after lunch 2.5 months from tomorrow? Well, Dan.
So, and now you're a Seattle person.
Now I'm
P.S. living on a houseboat.
Yes.
So you're one of them.
I'm one of them.
One of those people.
Well, you can take the girl out of Philly, but you really can't take the Philly out of the girl. At any rate, Nessa would send me these very micromanaging emails. And fortunately, my summer intern one day got bored waiting for something to download on my computer. And my French bulldog, Zsa Zsa, ended up with an email account. So I thought, oh, perfect. Zsa Zsa can write to Nessa and pretty much say, will you back off, girlfriend? You're driving me nuts. And so that's just what Zsa Zsa did. Nessa thought this was so funny, and it just piqued her delicious sense of humor that she wrote back immediately. And I started having so much fun. We both had so much fun with the correspondence that it became a daily thing. When Nessa finally got to Seattle, she said to me, you know, I think we have a book here. And think about it. All we did was have fun. So that's how the book came about. We certainly didn't think that it would end up dealing with the kinds of things that we did deal with. And yet, what a blessing, what a gift to have that vehicle.
Hmm. Let's do your first reading here where you introduce Nessa as a mentor to Zsa Zsa.
Well, earlier on, I'm going to skip some of the pieces about how they actually met, but at one point, Zsa Zsa writes to Nessa and says, "Dear Auntie Ness, I'm confused again. It's nearly holiday time, and Mary says that I'm naughty. Well, what does naughty mean? You told me when you visited that you're a naughty diva. Since I want to be just like you, I need you to explain what that means. How do I do it? Do I get more treats? If I'm very naughty, can I become a diva like you? I've heard of divas who sing, but I'm wondering, could there also be barking divas? Maybe I do not really understand what a diva is. Can you help me?" And Nessa writes back, "Dear Zizi, now Zizi, you little cutie patootie, let me explain a few things. Holiday time is when a chubby man in a red suit and a white beard takes stock of all the young people and gives them treats. They get the best treats if they're nice. When they're not nice, they get cold. Of course, I get cold all the time. I like cold because I can use it to draw pretty pictures on the sidewalk. You see, I enjoy being very naughty and somewhat devilish. You should ask some of my doctors. Their bedside manners need help, and they're in great need of repair. But you can tell I'm especially mischievous when I have a twinkle in my eye. Now, I'm going to give you a little historical perspective, Remember, history is how you got to where you are right now. Likely you're trolling for treats or romping in the park as I write this. But singing in the shower is a clue. The first divas were opera singers, and more often Italian rather than French. But we can live with that, since the word diva comes from the Italian, meaning a female deity. My heart be still. We are veritable goddesses. In your case, upon completion of your training, you might be a doggess. Of course, things change, but not human nature. Let this be a woof to the wise. Here is what the term diva really means today. An extremely talented professional performer with little tolerance for incompetence. There are, however, some malcontents who interpret the word in a pejorative sense, but let me assure you, little one, that divas have evolved in the 21st century. We are neither, excuse the Italian, bitches, nor are we high maintenance. And if we have been properly mentored by the divas who've come before us, then we pay forward by helping others make the grade. But real divas remain zealously respectful, thoughtful, and even on occasion, deferential. And of course, we always have fun. Now, frankly, I have never mentored a pooch on the track toward divadom, but there is always a first time, and I'm willing to give it a go if you are.
You know, one of the things she said early on was about her doctors and bedside manner. When did her illness come into play, and how did she introduce it?
Her illness came into play quite a bit later in the book. She was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer probably 4 or 5 months after she left Seattle. So the book was already at least halfway done. And she introduced it by telling Jaja how much she enjoyed playing with her, how much she enjoyed writing to her, how much she enjoyed having word games together. And when she finally admitted that she had cancer and that she had been very ill, it was only when Jaja complained to her that she had not been her usual daily correspondent. "What's wrong, Auntie Ness? Why am I not hearing from you?" And then Nessa did write and explain.
What did she say?
Let me just take a moment for that.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Mary Monica Mitchell, who's co-written a book with the late Nessa Forman called Woofs to the Wise. She's describing an interesting and intimate and poignant correspondence that really illustrates what it means to be friends and how to be close to someone who's ultimately losing their lives. We're going to be talking more about that with Terry Maxwell a little bit later. She's vice president of strategic initiatives at Weatherby Resources and the Hospice Education Network. Our number is 888-477-9499. And for the first time, we're getting tweets. So please tweet us at the hashtag voices. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Let's take a short break while Mary Monica Mitchell finds that page about how Nessa introduces her illness to Jaja. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. For nearly 75 years, Independence Blue Cross has been dedicated to improving the health and wellness of the people in southeastern Pennsylvania. Through the Independence Blue Cross Foundation and its new Healthy Futures Initiative, they are committed to transforming childhood wellness in our region. By encouraging children to eat right, get fit, and stay well through the new Healthy Futures Initiative, the Independence Blue Cross Foundation is changing the game. More information at ibxfoundation.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. Excuse me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Mary Monica Mitchell about her book, Woofs to the Wise, Learning to Lick Life and Chew on Civility. She wrote it with Nessa Foreman, and it really describes how to be with someone, how to be with a best friend, and we'll expand it, how to be with a family member whose health is in decline and whose life is slipping away. So before our, by the way, our number is 888-477-9499. If you are living with this experience now, please give us a call, or if you have, and loved you to share the lessons you've learned. So before our break, we were talking about when you, Mary, first learned about Nessa's illness. When and how did you learn it?
Nessa called me to tell me that, and she spoke with my husband as well, who is a surgeon. We were all pretty well shocked.
What did she say? Do you remember?
Yes, she... Mind you, Dan, it's important to tell you that in all the decades that I've known Nessa, she never had a head cold. So she was having some problems and didn't make sense to her, and so she finally went to the doctor. And she called me afterward, and she said, "Trips, I have cancer, and it's not good." And I said, "What do you mean by, well, tell me more?" And she explained that it was pancreatic cancer and that she would be having some surgery. Whereupon, Zsa Zsa wrote to Nessa, because Zsa Zsa's best friend down the hall, a boy named Peloton, had also had cancer and survived it. And so Zsa Zsa and Nessa began to talk about how frightening it was to learn that you had something seriously wrong with you. And then Zsa Zsa wrote and said, explained that Peloton was fine, but he had been sick for a while, and she described that process, which gave Nessa the opportunity to describe how she was being treated and how she was responding to the news.
Tell me how that changed your communication with Nessa, how it changed your relationship.
Well, it changed, I can't say it changed my relationship in making me treasure her so much more, because I, of course, was aware that the time was perhaps limited, that I just, that I had to realize and accept and help her accept. But what happened was that Nessa then poured all of her energy into fun and into life and into writing to Zsa Zsa about all kinds of goofy things and giving Zsa Zsa advice and helping Zsa Zsa look at things from a different perspective. For example, at one point Zsa Zsa wrote in great horror that someone had given her a squirrel outfit for Halloween and made her wear it. Now, there's no greater humiliation for a dog than to have to dress up like a squirrel. And she was just horrified. Nessa, of course, wrote back and said, "Now, wait a minute, look at it a little bit differently, because this is someone who loves you." And so Nessa would respond to lots of opportunities that Zsa Zsa provided her to give advice and also to be funny. Nessa was very, very funny. So the book actually became very humorous.
And I'm realizing now about dogs they don't have egos, so that death is not that big a problem for them. That the reason death is a problem is because, you know, of our egos. So they can live moment to moment from birth until death. And we're going to talk later about what Nessa's illness did to her in terms of making her self-absorbed, which is something we all hate.
Yeah.
Terry, I want to bring you in. Terry Maxwell, as I said earlier, is a vice president of strategic initiatives, and she's also the hospice director of the vice president of the Hospice Education Network, and she previously served on as executive director of the Center for Palliative Care at Thomas Jefferson here in Philadelphia. Terry, many hospices are now using pet therapy. Mary and Nessa use Zaza one way, but pets also have other benefits.
Oh, absolutely. And you find them in nursing homes now. You find them in many places. And, you know, they play such an important role. If nothing else, they're so calming. So they don't have an ego. And there's, you know, I love the book because I love animals. And I sat, you know, with my dog at my feet and my cat at my side as I sat and read the book. And, you know, they do. They bring a delight into your life, and they're so calming. So they can be very therapeutic. And I think that's one of the things when people opt to take hospice care at the end and they want to be at home, part of it is they want to be in their familiar settings and they want to be with their loved ones and they want to be with their pets.
Also, their loved ones. I heard from a woman who said when she was 13 years old in middle school and she was having a horrible time, I forget the details, she said her dog saved her life. She would come home and sit in the laundry room with the dog, and the dog would listen and love her regardless.
Unconditional.
So, yeah.
It's that unconditional love.
If I may inject here that Zsa Zsa had a career in being a therapy dog. She would go into my husband's medical office and work with the patients all the time. So they would just sort of pass her around from lap to lap to lap. So she was very clear to Nessa that she had a great deal of experience. And Nessa then picked up on this right away and made her feel better, but also mentored her in her career search because, of course, Jim, I might tell you, closed his practice of surgery 4 years ago, and now he teaches yoga full-time. So Zsa Zsa was out of a job, which meant a whole other through line in the book because Zsa Zsa was constantly asking for career advice and career suggestions, and Nessa, of course, had plenty of them.
I want to come back to a comment you made or a question I asked about how did this change your relationship? And you answered it beautifully, but I want to go to you. Terry, you had a reaction when I asked that question. I couldn't quite read your body language, but it was there. What was your reaction?
I was reacting in a positive way when Mary was basically saying that their relationship didn't change, that it became, you know, certainly when you know that you're going to lose someone and dying causes people to be very focused on what's important. So I'm sure that you were thinking you didn't have as much time.
Right.
But what I loved and even experienced in the book is, you know, they didn't stop laughing. They didn't, you know, humor was a very important part of the relationship. You know, there was an opportunity for Nessa to still feel valued. She was still able to give, you know, advice and had, you know, a lot to teach this dog about being a diva. So that was, I think, really, really important is that the relationship doesn't really change. And that's people who are ill don't want to be treated differently.
The relationship didn't change, and in my experience, it becomes more precious or we become aware of how precious it always was, but weren't fully conscious of it. Let's, I'd like you to read your next reading. When Nessa talks about how she was always brave, she always guarded herself, her own vulnerability, but how now she's got to open up. Do you have that?
Yes, I do. Zsa-Zsa, when Zsa-Zsa was in puppy school, they used to call her Zsa-Zsa the Brave because she never hesitated to take on the big guys. So Nessa wrote to Zsa-Zsa, "Dearest Zsa-Zsa, one of the things we have in common is that while no one ever called me Nessa the Brave, I used to love to take on the big guys, outsmarting them at every turn. But now, every time I turn around, someone gives me bad news about my illness. This time, it seems like I can't outsmart them. I do my best to pretend that I'm okay and not really scared. I don't talk about it with my human friends, and I take every opportunity to change the subject. I never miss a chance to get into a test of brains and willpower with my doctors and their staff. I challenge my friends, too. I guess I keep hoping that I will win. Deep down, I know that I won't. I'm shaking on the inside, especially lately. But I have noticed, Z's, that when I talk to you, I shake a little less. Maybe it's because you are a French bulldog and not a bullheaded human. So perhaps that is the next step for both of us, talking about it. This is where you surpass me. I've spent my whole life perfecting the human trick of feeling one thing, yet showing another. So for me, talking about it will take time. I'm not so sure I can keep all of it bottled up anymore, especially when I see so many people around who do love me and have more practice than I do in showing it."
That's heartbreaking. And it's heartbreaking, and it's true for the majority of us humans. And boy, that can be a teaching lesson for all of us. I want to turn to you, Terry. This business of hiding our vulnerability, we know about the damage it causes us and how it distances people from us. On the other hand, here's the fear that if everybody knows how vulnerable I feel, they will treat me differently, and then everything is gone. Then I am just a patient.
I think the best response to that is everyone's scared, and it shuts down everyone's communication. You know, if the show's about friendship, and people want to be a good friend when they hear that someone's ill, and especially when someone's dying, but everyone's so scared in how to do that right that people tend to back off, and all communication tends to shut down. I've learned that it's okay to actually, you know, face people's fears and ask about their fears, and allow them to voice them without thinking it's my job to fix them. If you think that you have to come into the room and fix these overwhelming problems that this person's illness and dying's bringing, then there's no way you're never going to show up. It's too scary.
And especially if you feel you have to make somebody feel better, them or you, that's where you get into trouble.
So being present, just a willing to be present, communicates to the person how much you care.
Easier said than done, my friend.
I think that's, you know, I'm a professional, and it's one of the things that I've tried to teach, and it was one of the hardest things to learn, and that is just to learn to be comfortable with silence.
I quote often a statement about love by Sheldon Kopp, an analyst in the 50s, and he said, "Love is tolerating your own helplessness in the face of a loved one's suffering. And that's where we jump in, mm-hmm. because we can't tolerate our own helplessness, so we do something. I want to introduce you guys and give out the phone number. We're talking about how to be with a friend, a loved one who's dying, what it's like for them, what it's like for us, what they need, what we need, and how to maintain that connection in a loving way. We're talking with Mary Monica Mitchell, who co-wrote a book with the late Nessa Foreman, a dear friend of mine, a dear friend of maybe hundreds, if not thousands of people. The book's called Woofs to the Wise, Learning to Lick at Life and Chew on Civility. I'm also here with Terry Maxwell, who's Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at Weatherby Resources and the Hospice Education Network. Our number, 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We would love to hear from you. If you've got a friend, family member who is ill and dying, or if you've had that experience of being with someone, tell us what you learned. Maybe tell us some of your regrets. We'll be back in just 60 seconds. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation works to advance economic opportunity in southeastern Pennsylvania. It helps strengthen nonprofits that develop workplace skills, teach financial literacy, help new arrivals, and sustain those undergoing tough times. The Foundation can help you make a difference for such nonprofits today and forever. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
Penn's Department of Dermatology supports WHYY. Do you have moderate to severe psoriasis? Penn is conducting a psoriasis clinical research study to determine if FDA-approved psoriasis treatments such as Humira, compared to phototherapy or placebo, improve cutting-edge markers of cardiovascular disease. To participate, you must be 18 or older and have psoriasis that covers 10% of your body. Info at 215-662-SKIN. 215-662-SKIN.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're speaking with Mary Monica Mitchell and Terry Maxwell about being a friend and how to be a friend to someone who's ill and dying. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you. Or you can send us a tweet at hashtag Voices. Terry, you've got a friend who's got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Tell me how she's doing and what it is she wants from her friends.
We just talked about this last night because she's doing really well, and we played tennis together. And we actually even won one of our sets, so we were pretty excited about that. We lost the first one badly, stuck together. Anyway, she's doing really well. But I thought it was helpful to kind of ask her, you know, when you got diagnosed, what were you looking for from your friends? Mm-hmm. You know, what did you find helpful? And a couple things that she mentioned, and they were the exact same things Nessa mentioned, was, you know, that most of the time she just totally wanted to focus on living and being healthy. And I think that's a big thing, is that people are afraid sometimes to touch base with their friends because you think that there's all these life and death kind of things going on. But most of the time, people are really focused on making the best of their day and focused on being as well as they can.
I've got a friend of mine, on the other hand, and I want to challenge it. She is quite ill, and she's been through some traumatic situations medically. She's quite ill, and she looks great. Physically, her eyes sparkle. She looks great. And she says when people approach her as though she's not ill, it really upsets her, as though they are relating to a shell and not really her. So how do you know how to approach this? How do you know what someone wants and needs?
You have to take their lead. And you're not always going to know. I think part of it is trying to have a sense of who that person always is, and they're probably going to be just more of that person. So trying to get a little bit of sense of how they've coped with things in the past is likely to give you a good hint as to how they're coping with things right now. But you do. You have to take the lead. I think the other thing is sometimes the best of us are going to say the wrong thing or not do quite the right thing. And if that happens, you know, just apologize. Say, gee, you know, it probably wasn't very helpful, but I meant well, but it didn't come out the way I had hoped.
After my accident, you can imagine all the people that came and out of love said really stupid things, you know, like don't give up hope and one day you'll walk and all that stuff. But I've got a cousin who came in, and P.S., that cousin is gravely ill as we speak. But he came in 30 years ago, and he looked at me, and he said, Dan, I don't know what to say to you. I don't know what to say. And I cried with gratitude that I didn't know either. And I just felt connected to this man. Mary, you're having a reaction here.
It looks like tears, huh?
It does look a lot like tears, yeah.
Well, I think that was one of the biggest lessons for me, and certainly the biggest challenge was not to draw back and not to say stupid stuff. Well, of course I said stupid stuff.
Of course, you're human.
But the gift of being right there with someone and meeting them where they were was probably the best gift that we gave each other.
Yeah. And that goes beyond living and dying. That's
yes.
With everyone. Uh-huh. Everyone. Let's go to the phones. We've got Bryn on the line. Hi, Bryn.
Hi.
You're on.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm an RN, so I've been the designated help person for a number of family members, including a widowed aunt. And she knew she was descending into what she called senility, what I guess we'd say is Alzheimer's, although it was never particularly diagnosed. But she asked for my help in ending her life as she had advanced Parkinson's also. And it was so hard to be the one who visited her week after week and yet to be on, to have to say, you know, I really can't. I'm an heir. I'm an RN. it's not allowed. You know, there were all kinds of reasons, and yet we just were not dealing at all well in the United States with end-of-life issues.
Terry?
Well, that's practically a whole other subject, but what I'm hearing is that your aunt was crying out with the loss of the impending loss of control, and most likely was someone who took a lot of pride in her intellect and her ability to communicate and probably was rather independent. And the thought of the impending loss of all of those things with a combination of Parkinson's disease and dementia was probably really overwhelming. What I would hope is that instead of thinking that hastening or dying is the only option, that there were, you know, that you visiting and being with her sort of helped. Again, it's that sense of wanting to still feel value as a human being. And I think, you know, the possible loss of that for her that was really demoralizing and probably really scary.
I counseled a mother-daughter mother was terminally ill, and daughter was middle-aged, and mother came to live with daughter. And I went to see them in their home, and mother was complaining, I can't do anything anymore. I can't help my daughter with dishes or making the bed, or I can't do anything. And daughter kept reassuring mother, that's okay, that's not important to me. And mom went on to complain about what she couldn't do. And I said to the daughter, what have you always wanted from your mother? And she said, what I've wanted from my mother is just to sit there quietly with me so we could talk about my life and her life. And mom smiled and said, that I can do, that I can do. And that we can all do. And, you know, I believe that love is probably the last thing to go when we're dying.
My grandmother, who was very dear to me, was very debilitated with arthritis and was pretty immobile in her final years. And I would be flying all over the country and just, you know, busy as a mom and in school and working and all kinds of things. And I would visit her little tiny apartment and feel like her world had become kind of so small. And I wondered about her quality of life. And so I asked her and said, you know, well, what brings you quality? What makes your life worth living? And she turned without any hesitation. She was in like an assisted living home. And she said, if I can go up during our mealtime, and if there's someone new and I can make them feel welcome, then that was a good day. So it doesn't, you don't have to be able to do dishes to still be of value to people and feel life's value yourself.
It's all about giving. That's quality of life. It's all about giving. It's not about getting. Mary?
May I? Two points on that. One is that just 3 days ago, I buried my mentor and my sort of my mother of choice, too. Mm. I mean, well, my honorary mother, not my mother of choice. I had a great mom, and she's left us, too. But the thing that always struck me about her name was Letitia Baldridge, and she was very well known for being Jackie Kennedy's the Kennedy White House social secretary, et cetera, et cetera. And she had a very debilitated last year or so, where she was not able to leave the bed. And Terry, it was exactly what you described, and what you just described, Dan, is that every time somebody walked by her room, she had a robust hello and welcome and something upbeat to say. And what a gift, what a lesson. It certainly was the fabric of the relationship that Nessa had with Zsa Zsa and me. And one way we closed the book was a reflection of the night that Nessa died. I didn't know quite how to close a part of this book, and so Auntie Nessa wrote to Zsa Zsa, and may I read you that segment? So she says, "Dearest Z, Mary came to visit me today. At the time, I was far too weak to talk or even to open my eyes. But I knew she was there. She stroked my hair and whispered, 'Ness, you're really beautiful and I love you.' Well, it's a good thing I couldn't talk just then, because I would have shouted, 'Get a grip! I believe in good, look good, feel good, but right now I look awful. My hair is curly and white. Who knew? It's been so long. No mascara, no mani-pedi, and I'm wearing this pathetic excuse for a nightgown. Now that I have some strength and have thought about it, I think I understand what she meant. Mary wasn't seeing the hospital bed wreck. She saw her friend, her favorite diva, and sister of choice, As the diva under my wings ease, you must remember always to be more beautiful on the inside than out. Continue being the well-mannered dog that you are. Take lots of sniffs on those walks. Don't speed up. That will help anyone walking with you to appreciate those precious moments they have. Do not growl or whine. Be happy to see people who love you, even when you don't know each other. And for goodness sake, be sure to pee and poop only in approved places. Dear Zizi, you are wise beyond your years. There's so much wisdom behind those pretty ears. The heart-shaped spot on your back is not there by accident. It's there to remind everybody of what you're all about, being a little dog with a big heart. I'm so proud to be your aunt. Snuggle a lot. I must rest now. Love, Auntie Ness.
And that was her last letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be beautiful on the inside. We got a call with a man who's struggling to comprehend, and I'll turn to you, Terry. Struggling to comprehend how a relationship with a loved one can keep having meaning now that they're gone. What happens after we say goodbye?
There, I think that the book did a beautiful job talking about that as well. And I hear this a lot, and my daughter Kara said it to me when she was a little girl on the anniversary of my father's death. And she didn't know it was the anniversary of my father's death, and he died when I was 9. And she looked at me and she said, "Your daddy's with you, you know. He lives in your heart." And that's, you know, what I think the greatest gift that you can give someone when they're dying is to let them know how much you love them and what the time together has meant to you, and that you'll always remember it. And a just very quick story, my mother-in-law, who will be 90 this in another week, got a call out of the blue the other afternoon, and it was the granddaughter of her maid of honor. And her dear friend from many, many years ago was dying on hospice and wanted to say goodbye to my mother-in-law. And so the granddaughter made the call. Mm. And she said, and I was talking to my mother-in-law the other day, and she said, "I could have used you." And I said, "Well, what did you say?" And she said, "I told her how much I loved her, how much our friendship meant, how many wonderful memories I have, and that I'll always remember her." And I said, "Well, you certainly didn't need me, because you got it right." And so it's I think if anything else, you know, for people to know that you're not there to try to make everything better, just by letting people know how much you love them and being honest and sort of stating the obvious is what really helps at the end.
Mary, a year after my sister's death, I interviewed some religious leaders about where in their mind and belief my sister was now. The one that seemed the most poignant and powerful and real to me was a Buddhist who said that his brother had died. And he said, "When my brother was living, he was alive for me in 50 different ways, and now he's alive for me in 49 different ways." Where is Nessa now for you?
Well, every time anything happens, of course, I still want to reach for the phone because I have to tell her. And that goes from everything to what's going on in the news to, you know, little meow moments that we shared. So she's very much there, and I think to myself, "Okay, Ness, what would you say? What would you do? What would you tell me?" And she's very, very much there. When I think I might have mentioned that my promise to Nessa was that I would finish this book, and on the 1 year anniversary of her death, I walked into a corporate dining room, and on the whiteboard, the question of the day was, "What was the most important promise you made in the past year?" Mm. So Nessa was very much with me. And she remains very much with me. And I think one thing is important is that we don't always need to. I'm crying a lot, but there was a lot of sass to it too. You know, I think that she loved it when I said, Nessa, you are being such a pain in the ass. I love you, but you're driving me nuts.
Yeah.
And because there's an acceptance.
I hear that a lot. What I've been observing with you today is tears and laughter sometimes at the same time. Could you say for us what this hour has been like for you?
Well, it's been great therapy.
you'll get a bill.
Thank you. It's been such a good reminder to bring it all together, to put it into focus, to remind us that sometimes we have no idea the impact we have on each other.
And I think that is the perfect point to end this show on. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. It's been wonderful and important. We've been talking with columnist Mary Monica Mitchell and palliative and hospice care expert Terry Maxwell. Mary's new book, co-written with Ness, is called Woofs to the Wise, and she's going to be discussing the book this Wednesday night at the Free Library of Philadelphia. Say, I'm going to be accepting the TICFA AJMI Righteous Person Award this week at Temple Beth Hillel. That's on Sunday the 18th at 11 a.m. I'm really honored to receive this. More information on my webpage. Next week on Voices, what we're thankful for. And you can share your thank you list by visiting our Facebook page. Hey, check us out at Voices at whyy.org/voices. The engineer's been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Loon is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn's our producer. And I am Dan.